Okay, so today we're diving deep into a Fourth Amendment case, one that's really significant. It's United States v. Arthur T. Weaver from the Eighth Circuit back in 1992. And this case, it really grapples with this big question. Like, when does a police officer's hunch at an airport, when does that cross the line? When does it become an unreasonable search?
Yeah, I mean, that's the core of it. Weaver forces us to think about this balance, right? Effective policing, but also protecting people's rights, their Fourth Amendment rights. And that's what we're going to unpack here, how the courts figure out if the police had reasonable suspicion. And it gets especially tricky when you bring in race as a factor. So we'll definitely be looking at that.
For this deep dive, you've gathered some awesome resources. We've got our usual podcast guidance, which helps us stay on track, right? And then a really thorough case brief with like all the key facts, plus a standard legal brief laying out the arguments, for and against. And then just to make things interesting, we even have a perplexity analysis, which should help us really wrap our heads around the complexities of this whole thing.
Yeah, the perplexity analysis is kind of like looking under the hood, seeing how the case was put together.
Exactly. So our mission today is to really dig into how reasonable suspicion is evaluated by the courts. And like we said, paying close attention to the whole race issue, how that plays in. And then ultimately, what does this all mean, for law students, for anyone interested in law? Because even though Weaver's a few decades old now, it's still incredibly relevant today. These issues about policing and civil liberties, they just keep coming up.
Oh, absolutely. It's like a thread running through so many cases we see today.
Okay, so let's get into the nitty-gritty. Can you set the scene for us? What went down at Kansas City International Airport back in March of 89 that led to this whole case?
All right, so we've got DEA agent Carl Hicks, and he's at the airport with two other detectives. They're watching a flight coming in from Los Angeles. When the flight lands, out walks Arthur T. Weaver, a young black man, and the description says roughly dressed. He's carrying two bags and he's like speed walking, making a beeline for the taxi stand.
Okay, so those are the initial observations, Rob. But what was it about those specific details that caught Agent Hicks' attention? I mean, what made him suspicious?
Well, Hicks later testified that based on his years as a DEA agent, he had this knowledge, this intelligence, that young black men linked to LA gangs were heavily involved in bringing cocaine into Kansas City. He also knew, just from experience, that drug couriers, they want to get out of the airport fast. They're going to grab a taxi and disappear. So, in Hicks' mind, you put it all together. Weaver's appearance, his race, and remember, he's connecting this to specific gang intelligence. The flight from LA, which was a known drug source city, and then him rushing towards the taxis. To Hicks, it all added up to potential criminal activity.
So it wasn't just one single thing. It was like the whole picture,
Yeah.
right? Seen through the lens of Hicks' experience.
Yeah.
So what happened when the officers approached Mr. Weaver?
They go up to him, identify themselves as law enforcement, and they ask Weaver if he'd be willing to chat with them. And, surprisingly, he agrees. He even shows them his plane ticket and some ID. But then comes the key moment. The officer is asked to search his luggage. Weaver, he initially says yes, but then boom, he changes his mind and withdraws consent. And that's crucial, that withdrawal of consent.
Oh, yeah. Things definitely shift there.
That.
So, what did the officers do once Weaver said, "Nope, you can't search my bags"?
Well, they couldn't search the bags without consent, so they decided to hold on to the luggage. They took the bags somewhere else in the airport and brought in a drug-sniffing dog. And wouldn't you know it, the dog alerts, indicating that there are drugs in those bags.
So, that alert basically gave them the green light, right?
Exactly. With the positive alert from the dog, they were able to go and get a warrant to actually open and search the bags. And sure enough, inside they found cocaine.
And that discovery obviously led to the charges against Weaver. What exactly was he charged with, and how did his lawyers try to fight those charges, given how the evidence was obtained?
Weaver was hit with a pretty serious charge, possession of cocaine with intent to distribute. His defense team, they went on the offensive and filed a motion to suppress. That meant they wanted the court to throw out the cocaine as evidence. Their argument was that holding Weaver's bags after he said no to the search, that was a violation of his Fourth Amendment rights. They said the officers never had that reasonable suspicion to justify detaining his luggage in the first place.
So it all boils down to that reasonable suspicion standard, right?
Absolutely. And the district court, they didn't buy the defense's argument. They denied the motion to suppress, which meant the cocaine could be used against Weaver. But here's the thing. He then entered a conditional guilty plea.
Conditional. What does that mean?
It's clever, actually. It means he's pleading guilty to the charge, but he's also reserving his right to appeal. He can still challenge that earlier decision by the district court to allow the cocaine as evidence. And that appeal, that's what takes us to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Okay, so that's how we get to the heart of this case. But before we jump into the Eighth Circuit's decision, can we back up a bit? Can you break down the Fourth Amendment for us? Like, what are the key principles the court had to consider here?
Sure. The Fourth Amendment, it's a cornerstone of our Constitution, right? It guarantees that people are protected from unreasonable searches and seizures. But, and this is important, there are exceptions. The Supreme Court, they've carved out some specific situations where a warrant and probable cause, they might not be strictly necessary. One of those exceptions, it comes from the famous Terry v. Ohio case. Terry was all about brief stops on the street, and it said that officers can do those quick investigative stops if they have a reasonable suspicion that a person is up to something criminal. But here's the key difference. Reasonable suspicion. It's a lower bar than probable cause, which you need for a full-on search or an arrest.
So it's like a sliding scale. Reasonable suspicion allows for a limited look-see, whereas probable cause, that's when they can really dig in.
Exactly. Like with Weaver, reasonable suspicion might let them hold the bags for a dog sniff, but they couldn't go rummaging through the luggage without either consent or probable cause and a warrant, unless, of course, some other exception to the warrant requirement applied.
Gotcha. So the Fourth Amendment sets the ground rules, and then these exceptions add a layer of complexity, especially when you're talking about something like reasonable suspicion, which, you know, can feel a bit fuzzy, right?
You're telling me. That's why the courts use something called the totality of circumstances test.
Okay, break that down for us. How does that test work?
It means they don't just look at each individual fact in isolation. They take all the info the officers had at the time of the stop, put it all together, and weigh those factors collectively. It's like a puzzle, right? Maybe one piece on its own doesn't seem like much, but when you put it all together, it might paint a clearer picture.
So for our listeners who might not be super familiar with this, let's be super clear. Reasonable suspicion. That's when officers have some specific, articulable facts that point to criminal activity, and it gives them the right to do a brief investigation.
Yeah.
But probable cause, that's a higher standard, right? Mm. That's when the evidence suggests it's more likely than not that a crime is happening or has happened. And that's when you need a warrant or an exception to the warrant requirement to do a full search.
Precisely.
Okay, so now we're ready to tackle the Eighth Circuit's decision in Weaver. What did the majority say? Did they think the officers had enough reasonable suspicion to detain Mr. Weaver's luggage?
All right, so the majority, they sided with the district court. They said, yes, under these particular circumstances, the DEA agents, they had enough to go on. And here's how they got there. First, they considered Weaver's race. Now, I know this is sensitive, but they specifically linked it to the agent's testimony about the intelligence regarding LA gangs and drug activity in Kansas City. Second, they pointed to Weaver's, well, his hasty exit from the plane and that quick walk to the taxis. Then there was the fact that he couldn't immediately produce ID when asked, although this point was disputed. They also factored in that he flew in from LA, which the agent had identified as a hotspot for drug trafficking. And lastly, they gave a lot of weight to the DEA agent's experience, you know, his years of dealing with drug traffickers.
So the majority took all of those pieces, you know, the race, the flight, the behavior, the experience, and they said, okay, this adds up to reasonable suspicion. But what about the luggage detention itself? Did they see that as a big intrusion on Weaver's rights?
No, they didn't. The majority, they called that brief detention for the dog sniff. They called it a minimal intrusion on his Fourth Amendment rights. Their reasoning was, well, a dog sniff, it's not like digging through someone's personal belongings, right? It just reveals if drugs are present or not. It doesn't expose any private info. And is it if the dog hits on something, then boom, you've got probable cause for a warrant.
Okay, so they saw the dog sniff as a sort of middle ground, less intrusive than a full search, but enough to maybe move things forward if needed. But let's talk about the elephant in the room here. Our podcast guidance flagged this right away, and I know it's something that gets debated a lot. The court's use of race as a factor.
Mm-hmm.
How did the majority justify that?
Right. They knew they were walking a tightrope here. The majority, they acknowledged that using race in law enforcement decisions, it's a super sensitive issue. But they insisted that Weaver's race wasn't used in isolation. They said it was just one piece of the puzzle, and it was specifically connected to that intelligence about drug trafficking patterns involving young black men from LA gangs in the Kansas City area. They were adamant that this wasn't racial profiling in the general sense, but rather a targeted use of information related to specific criminal activity as reported by an experienced officer.
Okay, but even with that explanation, it still feels, well, risky. I can see how that logic could easily be twisted to justify stops based on, you know, stereotypes instead of real individual suspicion.
That's exactly the point the dissent made, and it's a critique you hear a lot, even today.
So let's hear the other side. What did Chief Judge Arnold say in his dissent? What were his main arguments against the majority's finding of reasonable suspicion?
Judge Arnold, he wrote a powerful dissent. One of his main points was that the facts in Weaver were basically identical to another case the Eighth Circuit had decided, United States v. White. In White, the court said that similar observations, you know, someone coming from a source city and acting nervous, that wasn't enough for reasonable suspicion. Judge Arnold felt like the Weaver majority was ignoring precedent without a good reason.
And what about the specific factors the majority relied on? Did he address those individually?
He did. Judge Arnold was really concerned about the subjective nature of things like nervousness. You know, it was mentioned in the case, although the majority opinion didn't focus on it. He argued that giving too much weight to those kinds of subjective interpretations by officers, that opens the door to arbitrary and discriminatory policing. But his bigger issue, and this is key, was with considering race at all, even within the limited context the majority described. Judge Arnold worried that letting race be part of the equation, even if it's not the only factor, even if it's tied to some supposed intelligence, it creates a slippery slope, you know, toward racial profiling and the unfair targeting of minorities.
And he also made a strong point about the kind of environment this creates in airports, right? Like, if this becomes the norm, what does that mean for travelers?
Absolutely. He had this really powerful line. Airports risk becoming war zones if we normalize discretionary stops. It's a pretty stark image, but it gets at his fear that if we lower the bar for reasonable suspicion and allow things like race and subjective interpretations of behavior to play a big role, then we're basically giving law enforcement free rein to stop and question travelers without much justification, and that's a huge problem for civil liberties.
His dissent really seems to anticipate a lot of the conversations we're having today about systemic bias and problems in policing, right?
Totally. Judge Arnold's dissent, it's like a preview of the debates we're still having about racial profiling, the impact of these tactics on communities of color, and that constant struggle to balance public safety with individual rights. It forces us to ask tough questions. How does law enforcement use the information they have, and can factors like race ever be truly separated from implicit bias? I don't think they're easy answers.
Okay, so taking a step back, what's the big picture takeaway from Weaver? Why does it matter, you know, both in his time and now, all these years later?
Weaver, it's a perfect example of how difficult it is to define and apply this idea of reasonable suspicion, especially in drug cases where there's a lot of pressure to stop the flow of narcotics. It shows us how courts try to make sense of the totality of circumstances test and how tough it is to be objective when you're evaluating suspicion. And it's still super relevant today because we're still dealing with things like drug courier profiles, which, even if they're not explicitly about race, can still end up disproportionately impacting certain groups. And then you've got the rise of data-driven policing, which is a whole other can of worms. You know, are those algorithms hiding biases? It's something to think about.
For our law students listening, what are the key lessons from Weaver that they can use in their own work, you know, as they start dealing with these issues in real life?
If you're a law student, Weaver teaches you to be a detective. When you're arguing a suppression motion, you have to tear apart the government's case piece by piece. Don't just take their word for it. Examine every single factor they claim led to reasonable suspicion. Ask yourself, does this really point to criminal activity, or could it just be innocent behavior? And this is crucial. Be ready to argue that some factors, even if they seem neutral, might actually be masking bias, especially racial bias.
So it's about really digging into the details and not being afraid to challenge assumptions.
Exactly. And Weaver is a great example of how much weight courts give to the experience of law enforcement officers. You need to understand how they're using that experience. Is it based on solid evidence or on generalizations that might be problematic? That's key to building a strong argument.
I remember there were a couple of quotes that really jumped out at us when we were preparing for this.
Oh, yeah, there were some good ones. Like from the majority opinion, they said, and this is a classic line, reasonable suspicion derives from a totality of circumstances, not isolated factors. That's like the golden rule for these kinds of cases. But then you've got John Arnold in his dissent. He warned us, airports risk becoming war zones if we normalize discretionary stops. Those two quotes, they really capture the tension at the heart of Weaver. You know, the need for security versus the protection of individual rights.
And there were also some really interesting discussion points raised in our materials, like how specific does that intelligence from law enforcement have to be to justify even considering race? And then, can traveling from a high crime area, can that alone be enough to raise suspicion? And what about nervousness? That's so subjective, right? How can you measure that fairly?
All excellent points. The level of specificity for using race-related intelligence, that's a constant debate. Are general statistics enough, or do you need a much more direct connection? And the idea that just coming from a certain city can make you suspicious, that's a scary thought, you know? It could mean tons of innocent people get harassed for no good reason. And nervousness, well, as we've said, it's super hard to judge objectively. Someone might be nervous because they're doing something wrong, or they might be nervous because they're being questioned by the police. Who knows? It's tricky.
Our guidance also pointed out something interesting, a bit of a wrinkle in the case record, about whether Mr. Weaver actually showed ID or not. It seems like there were conflicting accounts.
Yeah, that's a good lesson for any aspiring lawyer. Even in published cases, the facts aren't always crystal clear. Witnesses might remember things differently, or there might be errors in the transcript. It happens. So for law students, it's a reminder that paying attention to the details, making sure everything's properly documented, that's crucial. A little discrepancy can make a big difference down the line.
Well, this has been an incredibly insightful deep dive into United States v. Arthur T. Weaver. It's a case that, you know, clearly still resonates today, raising big questions about the Fourth Amendment, policing, and the role of race in the legal system.
Couldn't agree more. It's a decision that forces us to confront this ongoing challenge of balancing law enforcement's goals with the fundamental rights that protect us all.
So as we wrap up, I want to leave our listeners with a thought-provoking question, something to ponder, inspired by the Weaver case. In our efforts to fight crime, you know, drug trafficking and everything else, does the Weaver decision, with its acceptance of race as a factor in reasonable suspicion, does that represent a necessary tool, something we need to keep us safe? Or is it a dangerous step down a slippery slope towards institutionalized profiling, a system that undermines equality and weakens the Fourth Amendment? It's a complex question with no easy answer, and I encourage you to really grapple with it, to think about the nuances and the potential consequences of this important ruling. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
Thanks for having me.